And good morning. It's now 8:06. You're listening to KPCW, and this is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Now joining me on the line from the ABC4 Weather Center is meteorologist Nate Larson with a look at the weather. Good morning to you, Nate.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Wasatch back, Park City. We've got another typical warm, above-average start to your Monday, similar to what we've seen over the weekend with some of the smoky skies as well as the Yellow Lake fire continues to burn. So plan on some sunshine mixed with some of the haze. Temperatures near 73 today. We do have a little bit of cloud cover, some moisture moving through eastern portions of the state. There's a 20% chance we could see a stray shower over Park City as well. In Heber, still smoky skies as well, upper 70s. For your highs on this Indigenous Peoples Day. As we get into tomorrow, plan on temperatures near the same, mid-70s continuing. We are finally tracking some changes, though. It's going to bring a drastic taste of fall, even early winter feels by the end of the week. So hopefully you're excited for a little bit of snow. We've got upper 60s by Wednesday. Temperatures overnight falling to the low 40s into Thursday. A cold front Wednesday into Thursday will drop us to just 52 in Park City for the high Thursday. Plan on some showers off and on throughout the day. And we will likely see some snow showers Thursday night into Friday as another front moves in. Temperatures fall to 31 degrees in Park City and 41 for the high on Friday. So a good 30 degrees colder on Friday than we are today. 47 for the high on Saturday, back to 52 on Sunday, so a gradual rebound back to more seasonal temperatures. Heber are looking for similarly a large temperature drop, 80 degrees tomorrow, 73 on Wednesday, will drop to just 59 on Thursday, with a drop another 10 degrees to the upper 40s on Friday. Overnight lows in the upper 20s and low 30s by the end of the week. So rain and snow showers expected for Heber as well. And drying out some for the weekend. We'll hang on to a slight chance of moisture. Partly cloudy skies for both locations. But Heber back to 55 on Saturday and upper 50s on Sunday. So enjoy these 70s, even some low 80s in Heber. It's all going away very soon.
Yes. Well, Nate, I think, you know, we've all enjoyed this beautiful long fall, and now we're ready, especially with consideration of the Yellow Lake fire. Is the precipitation, I mean, I know the cool temperatures are going to help. Is the precipitation enough that it's going to help?
It should make a substantial impact. Yeah, a lot of the early estimates are showing the amount of water that could come with this storm system could be anywhere from a half of an inch to an inch of moisture. So some of the early snowfall estimates are showing, in fact, I'm looking at one for the Alta Collins site, so in Little Cottonwood Canyon, showing we could get 2 to 2.5 inches of moisture, which could equate to 10, 15, even 20 inches of snow higher up. So this is going to be a good storm system to help with the fires that are burning, for sure.
This is big. Okay, good. Yeah. And then in terms of predictability over, you know, these last couple of days of enjoying, you know, our trails and the mountains here in the Summit and Wasatch County area, what about smoke over the next couple of days?
So it is going to stay smoky skies, hazy. So south flow is going to continue ahead of, especially Wednesday, it's going to be quite gusty. So fire danger is actually going to continue to increase through midweek ahead of that front. With the direction that the air is coming from and pushing the smoke towards, a lot of it should steer clear or stay fairly decent. In fact, the Department of Environmental Quality expecting moderate air quality to continue for Wasatch and Summit counties for the next 3 days. And then it should improve quite a bit as the storm system pushes in Thursday and Friday. So overall, I mean, depending on where your proximity is and how close you are to the fire that's burning, your air quality could, of course, get worse. And I know it does kind of sock into some of those mountain valleys overnight, but it should improve throughout the day. And the general trend is still forecasted for moderate or yellow air quality days.
Okay, sounds good. ABC4 meteorologist Nate Larson. Thanks, Nate.
You bet.
Coming up this hour, we'll have some local news, followed at 8:15 by Summit County Health Department Deputy Director Kendra Babbitts. She'll have an update on vax-and-go clinics and how area residents are responding to smoke in the air in terms of respiratory disease. Then at 8:30, local resident Carla Olson joins to discuss her new book, The Empty Nesters Club. We'll look forward to that conversation. Then at 8:45, Kristen Schultz is the director of the Early Childhood Alliance with the Park City Community Foundation, and she will be in for an update. That's all coming up this hour on the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as Deer Valley seeks approval of its plans for a new village base area, the Park City Planning Commission's focus is on how visitors and day skiers will get to the resort. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has these details.
In a brief meeting Wednesday, Park City Planning Commissioners provided some initial feedback to Deer Valley officials about the ski resort's plan to build a new village complete with hotel rooms and restaurants on the existing snowpark parking lots. Deer Valley wants the commission to approve the transformational project in two phases. First up for review is a three-story underground parking garage with nearly 2,000 spaces. The ski resort's application for the second phase, which includes residential units and commercial space, could come later this year, according to a staff report. On Wednesday, Planning Commissioner Laura Susser said not knowing the exact plans for the buildings above the parking garage during the first approval process may provide some difficulties.
Getting to an approval point for the parking garage without knowing what the uses are is, I think, going to be an ongoing struggle.
Susser asked for Deer Valley to return to the next meeting with more details about building occupancies and other traffic data. The ski resort said it is considering several measures to curtail single occupancy drivers coming to the redeveloped base area, which is expected to generate over 800 new daily trips to Snowpark. Such measures include paid parking, parking reservations, and potential hotel shuttles. Commissioner John Frontero, along with other members, said expanding shuttle service should be a priority.
Maybe you have a pilot program for a year or two, and you have six shuttles that move through town in the early morning and in the evening. And the goal is to reduce single occupancy vehicles. And so I think you have a lot of tools that are available, and I believe you'll need to use all the tools available. And I think the shuttles, I see that as a excellent tool to be able to move locals around.
According to data shared at Wednesday's meeting, nearly 60% of guests get to Deer Valley today by driving alone. Around 13% use public transit and 15% carpool. The commission also asked resort officials to return with more information about ski school drop-off and the proposed traffic changes for the Deer Valley Drive loop. The project is set for a special commission meeting October 30th. The Snowpark Village proposal will be the sole focus of that discussion. According to a timeline from city officials, a vote on the parking garage could occur as soon as December. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Joining me now in the studio is Summit County Health Department Deputy Director Kendra Babbitts. She's in with an update on the community health assessment, Vaccine Go Clinic, among many other things. Good morning to you, Kendra.
Good morning.
Welcome. So the Vaccine Go Clinics, can you give us an overview for those who have not heard that this is a thing? You just sit in your car?
Yes.
Oh, that makes it easy.
It is hopefully the easiest appointment that you've ever received vaccinations for, also in the most beautiful setting. You don't have to get out of your car. This is only the second year that we've done them. And so we just wrapped up our three clinics. So we had one in Camas, one in Colville, and one in Park City. And they wrapped up the first week of October, but we still want to encourage people to get these on their calendar for next year. It'll happen that first week of October every year, hopefully in the same locations. And we saw much greater turnout than last year, so we are thrilled with how well it went.
Did you do flu shots as well as, was it just the COVID vaccine and flu shots, or were there other vaccines?
It was for COVID and flu for adults and kids.
Okay.
Other vaccines we ask that you call our clinic to make an appointment for, but we do a big push in the fall every year during October to try and get people immunized before we hit our respiratory disease season.
So really you just sat in your car, rolled down the window, they rubbed a little rubbing alcohol on your arm, and away you go.
Yes, exactly. So I don't think anyone waited more than 10 minutes.
Okay.
And we have all of our nursing staff out there, and we have our emergency preparedness staff, our team at the health department, Derek Moss, our nursing director, and Chris Crowley, our emergency preparedness director, did a wonderful job organizing these, and we have volunteers from the community helping as well.
Can you talk a little bit about getting the COVID vaccine and flu shot at the same time? I have to say that, you know, when I got the COVID vaccine, I felt pretty down for 36 hours. I'm hesitant to get a flu shot at the same time.
Yes, some people experience symptoms more so than others. If people experience severe symptoms, sometimes they'll want to get one and then wait till the next week to get the other one. Many people do that, and some people, depending on the brand of vaccine, will have more symptoms than others. So you may want to try different brands as well.
Okay. And in terms of this COVID vaccine, what are you seeing in terms of people who maybe have gotten all the boosters all along and then have decided, okay, I've had enough. I'm just going to get COVID and hopefully not get too sick. What do you say to those people?
We really advise against that. As you know, COVID is a new disease and it's still rapidly changing. So we have new variants popping up all the time. The great thing with the mRNA vaccines is that we're able to change the formula really quickly to match what exists out in the community. And so we really encourage people to get those updated boosters because they are updated to match the formula of variants that are circulating.
And does that mRNA, the way that you're updating the boosters now, is that different from those initial boosters or the initial booster of the vaccine?
Yeah, they're a totally different formula. So it's made to match what we're seeing circulating now. So both in the end of winter and the summertime that we're seeing.
Okay, great. Well, one of the things that the Summit County Health Department looks at is the results of the SHARP survey. Now, this is a survey that any parent in the community knows about because you're asked to opt in. So you have to sign to get your child in. But it really unveils a lot of information about the mental health, the physical health, and many other things about the children in the district. What ages or which grades fill out those surveys?
It's 6th grade, 8th grade, 10th grade, and 12th grade.
Okay. And why does the Summit County Health Department also look at and kind of sift through those results?
So in public health, we are really focused on prevention. We want to prevent negative mental health outcomes in the community. We want to prevent substance use and abuse. And so this is really the only way that we can see data at a community level regarding youth risk behaviors and protective behaviors. So the survey will ask things about substance use. It will ask questions that are also protective, like, are they having regular meals with their family? Are they having pro-social interactions with their peers and their family? Are they experiencing bullying or cyberbullying? So it covers things that otherwise we would have no way to know what issues there are for the youth in our community.
Okay, so what are some of the results that you have seen? I know it takes a long time to really evaluate and do the data analytics on the results. But when did you get the results back?
So we have 2023 results back, and they usually come between October and November. So we're in October now, so we have some earlier than expected, which is great. It really gives us ideas of trends. And so this survey's been around since 2003, and the nice thing about having it offered every other year is we can see, are trends going up or are they going down? Where do we need to put our resources for these services? And that's really important. So some of the highlights that we saw that we just presented to our Board of Health last week is that marijuana use has increased among 12th grade students from 27.5% in 2021 to 45.7% in 2023. And we're also seeing that attitudes, both from the parents and student peers towards drug use in youth, is becoming more positive. So that's something that's concerning to us at the Health Department.
Do you think with all of the legalization, you know, in many states surrounding Utah of marijuana, that parents are almost saying something like, I'd rather you use marijuana than drink alcohol? Or maybe they're turning to that themselves.
It very well could be. Those are things that we don't know for sure, and we're trying to figure out what is the cause of this data trend that we're seeing that's concerning. And again, it's concerning because youth, their brains are still developing until their mid to late 20s, and we don't want habits of addiction to form in their brains.
What other results have you seen?
So in some positive results, we are seeing family attachment for all grades increasing. So from 64.9% in 2019 to 76.7% in 2023. And so that shows that people are more involved with their families. They're spending time with their kids. They feel that close emotional and social connection with their families. So that's wonderful.
So those would be the types of questions on the survey. You know, 1 to 10, do you feel a close connection with your family, or is it more specific questions like how many nights a week do you have dinner together?
It is all the above.
Oh, okay.
So it's a comprehensive survey, and it is a lot of questions, but it only takes about 15 minutes or so for the students to complete. But yeah, so they cover all of those topics.
So wouldn't you say that 76% is very good, especially in this day and age where you have a lot of, you know, both parents are working and things like that?
Yeah, that is wonderful. And that's something that is a protective factor. So if you have those connections, your students or your children are less likely to experiment with alcohol, experiment with drugs at those young ages.
Okay. Anything else of note that you want to mention?
Oh, just representing our respiratory disease season coming up. I know you mentioned that the smoke is in the air.
Yes.
That also affects our respiratory health. So the smoke from the Yellow Lake fire, we're seeing trends the past couple of weeks where the smoke is often worse in the evenings and the mornings. As the day warms and increases in temperature, the thermals change and that clears out a little bit. So just make sure before you're going out to do exercise outdoors or to socialize outdoors that you're checking the air quality. You can do that at our health department website at summitcountyhealth.org.
Oh, that's great news. Or great to know, because I often will go on Purple Air for the AQI, the Air Quality Index, and it'll be very strange where it'll say like Park Meadows is 150 and Prospector is 50. And you think, wait, they're very close. How is that? I mean, can you talk a little bit about the stations or the detectors around town? And are those the same ones that are fed to the Summit County Health Department?
Yes, they're the same ones. So we take directly from Purple Air and post that data on our website. So that's the same data you're seeing. The Purple Air monitors are located in various places across Summit County, whether it's through a business or a private-owned home. There are places where you can see that data, and it will vary. As you've noticed, Summit County has lots of mountains, has lots of valleys. It has really windy areas, not as windy areas, and all of that affects how the smoke settles. So it's really great to check before you go out.
During this time of the Yellow Lake fire, when the smoke has really been sitting in the valleys, I've wondered, are there detectors that are up high? Maybe, you know, in Upper Deer Valley or in the Bonanza Flat area, or, you know, so that you know where you can maybe go and, well, recreate.
Yes, they are in various places. It's always great to have more coverage, really. But we take the data that we have, and sometimes you'll see, well, the place I want to go, it's kind of between monitors. So make your best estimated guess based on what you see from other located monitors close by.
Okay. And I'm concerned that this smoke, you know, is sort of setting us up respiratorily, if that's a word, for, you know, coming into the season where we have a lot of respiratory issues going on with, you know, cold season and all of that. But can you talk a little bit about the health of our lungs, our respiratory system?
Yes. Yeah, so with smoke and any particulate matter in the air, we're worried about developing chronic diseases. We're also worried about folks who might have asthma, who might already be at risk if they have comorbidities. And so we really encourage people who are sensitive to air pollution to really monitor that closely. If you had a sensitivity to the air pollution and then got a respiratory illness, that would be potentially devastating. So we want to make sure people are really watching their health and also making sure they're getting the required vaccinations before we start seeing a wave of respiratory illness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then finally on that, not to belabor that topic, but there are a lot of people who are trying to enjoy these last days of you know, warm temperatures, and they're out on trails. What should the AQI be below to then tax your lungs even further by breathing hard if you're hiking or mountain biking?
So it really depends on the individual and whether you fall into one of those sensitive groups. For me personally, I have a little bit of sensitivity, not a lot, and so I won't recreate where I'm breathing heavily outside if it's in the yellow, but that's not for everybody.
Okay.
So it's good to check on Purple Air to see what those colors and thresholds are.
And know your own lungs. Okay, you have a community health assessment. What is the update on that?
Yes, this is our last big push for everyone to take our community health assessment survey. Our epidemiologist, Nancy Porter, has done a great job getting out in the community to make sure that people are aware of this survey. This will close at the end of the month on October 31st. And our goal is to get 1,000 survey responses. And we are really close. We're at 902 responses. So we're hoping in the next couple of weeks we can get that to our goal of 1,000. And that will be helping us to plan our services and programs that health will focus on for Summit County for the next 5 years. So we really want to get the community perspective in addition to our other data sources to say these are important concerns in the community, and it covers everything from environmental sustainability, being prepared in an emergency, whether or not you've experienced discrimination, among typical health topics.
Okay, big question. How long does it take to fill out thoughtful about it, and where do you find it?
Yes, if you go to our website, summitcountyhealth.org, it is one of the very first boxes you see on our homepage. So you can click it there. You can see the survey in English or Spanish, and it takes about 10 to 15 minutes.
Even if you're being very thoughtful.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Anything else you wanted to add this morning?
No, thank you so much. This has been great.
And congratulations on almost a year as the Deputy Director at Summit County Health Department.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Kendra Babbitts, thanks for joining me. In more local news, Heber City is in the middle of a years-long, multi-million-dollar project to replace its water infrastructure. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this update.
Work to replace the city's 70-year-old water and sewer lines has been underway since 2022, when leaders budgeted $43 million for construction on the east side of town. That price tag has soared since then, thanks to what City Manager Matt Brower has described as extraordinary inflationary pressures. Now construction could cost an extra $12.5 million, so the city is issuing bonds to cover the extra expenses. Three resolutions passed by the City Council in September authorized the city to issue up to $2 million in irrigation bonds and $6.5 million in sewer bonds. The City Council hosted two public hearings for the project on October 1st, though no one spoke up. A third and final public hearing is October 15th, when locals can share their thoughts on the city issuing up to $4 million in water bonds. City officials also applied for supplemental funding from the Community Impact Board and received $5.9 million in sewer funding. As Heber plans for higher project costs, construction on water lines in Heber is wrapping for the season. Crews are working on small sections of 4th North and 2nd South, east of Main Street. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And now joining me in the studio is local resident Carla Olson. She's joining to discuss her new book, The Empty Nester. Rediscover who you are before your kids leave the nest. What a good idea. She says you can define your next chapter, rediscover who you are, with newfound clarity, courage, connection, and community. Carla, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What a good idea this book is.
Thank you.
Do you feel like most people don't really, I mean, they worry about being an empty nester, but they don't really do anything about it?
Yep. So yeah, that's why I thought the almost empty nester. I wanted to try to get to moms like a year or two before their kids left high school. But it also works for people that are currently empty nesters. But when I started researching this, when my second daughter left for school, I still didn't know what I wanted to do when my final daughter was going to leave this year in 2025. And so the statistics are alarming. There's 22 million empty nesters in the U.S. alone, and research says only 7% prepare for it, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And 63% report feeling lost and alone during this time. Not all the time, but they still report having those feelings. And so that's my goal, is to sort of help elevate the conversation around empty nesting from a position of lack to potential for more joy in this stage of life.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so I'm assuming this is for everyone, not just someone who has been a, you know, quote, stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
But it could be someone with a really big job, but then mm-hmm. you also have the big job of motherhood on top of that.
Yep.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your target audience.
Yeah, my target audience is really, I wrote it from the mother's perspective. I was working with a branding company in Nashville, and about the first 6 months, I was trying to write it for parents, and literally, I was like, I have to write this from my perspective, because the way that I'm experiencing almost empty nesting might be different than my husband's or someone else's, and so my target is really just anyone, any mother that has kids that are in high school, maybe has dropped off their first kid at college last month. We have a lot of those that are straddling, first one going off and then one still at home. And then for those mothers that their kids have been out of the house and they're just looking to rediscover their midlife passions and purpose, because there's so many gifts that we all have inside of us. And that's what I want to light up within mothers is, so, you know, we have a whole nother career ahead of us if we want. Mm-hmm. So my book sort of, I take them through, the arc of the book is really constructed to take them through this process to define like their soul whispers and bring those to life. Maybe like, you know, being a mom, we're pulled in a lot of different directions. And I found myself some things that I wanted to do, I'd put on the back burner. But it was like trying to hold my wishes and dreams underwater like a beach ball. It just kept wanting to come up. And when your kids leave, that's when you really have time to start working on some things that you've always wanted to do.
Yeah, so it's not really a time that you should look at it as you've lost your identity, which, you know, which that is part of the thing that can happen in motherhood, but you're really finding your identity. So kind of flipping to make it like this positive thing and not this scary thing.
I talk about that exactly in the book. I have an acronym called Flip It. So whenever I have a limiting belief about empty nesting, like I'm going to be sad or, you know, I'm too old to start something new, I flip it, which stands for feel like it's possible. And then I insert the exact opposite of, well, I have time to do anything I want, like write a book or start a new career or, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. We have so much runway and so much passion inside of us, especially since when you're not actively mothering every day, you've got to find another vessel to put that energy into. And that's what my book's all about.
Well, you have something that just caught my eye is baby steps. I was just talking with a few girlfriends yesterday about, you know, you get up in the morning and sometimes it's just baby steps, you know, it's just,
it is just over time. I know.
Yeah. Because when you are reoriented to a completely kind of a new life without those kids there, it leaves a big gap.
It does. And we talk about that too, right after the baby steps chapter. It's funny you brought that up. We talk about leaning into the new rhythm, because think of all the things we do when the kids are under our roof. We have to get up, breakfast, homework, you know, all the things, right? Practices. And then that busyness sort of like slows down a little bit. Not that you aren't busy with your career or all that, but just the mothering part does. And so in my book, we talk about how to fill back up that puzzle piece with things that really bring you joy. And so you don't feel as empty because you're doing things that, you know, really you've wanted to do in a long time. And now you have more time to do.
Yes. What about detaching from your kids a bit? My kids are 26 and 29, and I feel like I'm still so attached and, you know, like texting them almost every day to find out what they're doing today, you know?
And, I know.
And so I think there's value in learning to kind of step away and let them develop their own lives.
Yes. I call it in the book untethering. And yeah, I think it's just a healthy thing. Like when you start to untether, I talk about it when like they get their driver's license. It's new to them and it's also new to you that you don't have to drive them around anymore. So it's a good time to just start untethering from your child a little bit, letting them take on some responsibilities that you used to do. And then with that time you have, start doing things for yourself and just trying to really identify yourself, not just through the lens of motherhood, but get back in touch with your individual unique identity a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's a good time for when the break starts to happen. But I get it. I have two kids at college and I text them too. So
yeah, it makes me just realize, well, we have lived in this age of, as you and I have been parents, helicopter parenting, and it's not anything that we ever thought we would want to be, but you start reading some of the definitions of a helicopter parent, and you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
So is this kind of book and this concept more important for those people who have just made their kids' lives just so wrapped up, you know, their own lives wrapped up with their kids?
Yeah, it is. It really is. I think that's the whole point, is that we think somewhere along the way we got this narrative that doing self-care and doing stuff for ourselves was selfish, like this whole mommy martyrdom thing that took off. And it could not be farther from the truth. The more that our kids see us filling up our own cups and letting others fall in love with the overflow, that is such a healthy way for our kids to be like, I need to go out in the world and take care of my dreams too. And, you know, not in a selfish way, but just a happier, more fulfilled mom is going to have a ripple effect with her family, friends, and in her community. And that's just what I'm hoping people understand is, I really hope they learn how to turn some of that love back into themselves.
Well, I know you wrote this from your own perspective as being a mom, but for example, what has your husband said about, you know, how helpful this is? Is this something that you could, you know, read together?
You know, he said no.
Thanks a lot.
No, he just said, you know, Carla, I just look at it in a different way, not better or worse. He said, yeah, there's definitely some great things in there. It got him thinking a little bit about his soul whispers, and he's in a band, and he's like, maybe I'll start playing around town a little bit more. Just kind of like stepping out, you know, courageously a little bit more, listening to your inner compass versus your inner critic and kind of going for some things. But yeah, I think anyone who's a caregiver could really just benefit from it, because it talks about the, you know, your daily active parenting, and then when they go away to college or out to the military or off to a job, it just sort of stops besides the texting. And so it's getting used to that new rhythm that really helps people when they go through the book. That's, people say that was one of the most impactful chapters. And then my other favorite chapter is chapter 4, when we get to hear a highlight reel from our children about their experience of us as parents.
Oh, really?
It's really amazing.
Give us a few little sneak peeks at that, because I would love to be a fly on the wall hearing, you know, our kids along with their friends talking about, well, do your parents do this? Do your parents still text you, you know, 10 times a day? No.
Yeah, it's in there, and it's great. I think there's about 12 questions in there, and my editor actually did it for Mother's Day, and her two grown sons took 2 weeks to write out the answers to these and frame them for her and gave them to her for Mother's Day. And, you know, the gift was is that her sons just had the best memories of when she was just being her. It wasn't these big audacious things. It was just her being Tracy. So that's what I thought was one of the neatest things, is that you get a highlight reel from your children. And then the other thing I love in the book is that I have moms take a pause, because I think, you know, we're running and running since we've had these babies. We never kind of take a pause and look at all the magic, the many miracles we've created for our family along the way. Like, I actually had the mother we are today write a letter back to our younger mother self when we're first holding a baby and reconnecting, and think how much we've all learned since then. So it's really, it's just, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to take moms through this process.
So this is something that you do as a coach and a speaker. Mm-hmm. You do this. So how do you coach? What do you have, a coaching business?
Yeah. So basically within the book, it's a book, but it's also my mini course. Mm. So I wanted it to really have a lot of meat to it. And then we're also going to have an accompanying journal in the next 2 weeks. But it's a lot of inner work. And so a lot of times people want to work with me like once a week as they go through this process. So the book's divided in the past, the present, and the future. So a lot of my coaching is about 4 sessions where we introduce each other, what they're looking to get out of the book. And then we kind of revisit after they've gone through the past section, the present section, and the future section, see what's coming up with them, make sure they're on their right path, because within the book, we help the reader define a game plan for their next best chapter in empty nesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would you be able to characterize, say, if people were to ask themselves the question, you know, would I be a candidate for this book? I mean, I guess the bigger question is, what do people really do wrong in this stage?
Mm.
Or what do you see as the biggest kind of mistakes or the biggest challenges that, you know, like, oh, yes, you need this book?
Yeah. I think in my research, this isn't just my opinion, but it's acceptance and preparation. So in all of the studies that I've gone over, the happiest empty nesters are the ones that started thinking about it a year or two before it happened. And so as humans, we all want to delay, like packing for the airport or, you know, signing up for summer camp. You know, this is one of those things that we just really need to kind of just start thinking about when your kids are juniors or seniors, and just, you know, maybe just taking, like we talked about, those little baby steps of, well, I've always wanted to play pickleball. Maybe I should just go to the court and watch some of my friends, or, you know,
right.
I'm a little late to the pickleball game, I confess. but that's the whole thing. It's just really preparation, and it's also acceptance that there's going to be joy with the pain, just like there is in life. There's both sides to it. So, and, you know, we'll never stop being a mother. We'll always be their mother or their parent or their caregiver, whoever's listening. But, you know, it's just a really good time for us to start pouring a little bit of that love back into ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. This is very reminiscent to me of, you know, I'm sort of at the age where peers are starting to think about retirement. And again, it's the same thing. If you don't plan, and I don't mean financially, I mean, you know, psychically or whatever.
Yes, emotionally.
Yes, emotionally for retirement. You have to start ahead of time, or when it happens, you might just be lost.
Yeah. I know, we were just taking my mother-in-law through a retirement home. Her best friend just moved into one, and they are having the time of their lives. There are so many activities. They're going here and there and everywhere. And they actually were excited that they did it a little bit earlier because they still have pretty good health. Mm-hmm. Because instead of waiting till the end where you just go into a home, you know, it's like they're out doing things with all these people. They're just having a ball.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Carla Olson is my guest, and the book is The Almost Empty Nester: Rediscover Who You Are Before Your Kids Leave the Nest. It's great. Do you have a book signing or anything at Dolly's?
I have one at Barnes & Noble this Saturday the 19th from 12 to 3, and at Macy's Grocery Store from 3:30 to 5. And then Dolly's I'm still working on, but that'll be soon. And then in November I have one at the new Barnes & Noble in Park City, which I'm so excited is going to be open.
New Barnes & Noble in Park City?
It's in Kimball Junction.
I had no idea.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. I'm so excited.
Okay, great. Carla, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yes, thank you.
The joyous atmosphere of the 70s returned to Park City Saturday as hundreds of people who called the city home way back then gathered for a reunion. KPCW's Christine Weller has this.
Hundreds went through the no-name saloon on Park City's Main Street Saturday for a 1970s reunion. The bar and grill was filled with joyful reunions, hugs, and some tears. Many wore name tags and pins reading, "Not Old as Dirt." Some still live in the area. Others traveled from across the U.S. to celebrate. Annie McMullen and Sandy Kinter organized the event. They said more than 400 people RSVP'd for the reunion, and even more who didn't RSVP arrived to celebrate. The attendees all lived in the mountain town during the 70s. The last reunion was around 20 years ago, and the pair felt it was time for another one. McMullen said they wanted a joyous reason to get together instead of memorials where many have been meeting lately.
We've all been dealing with our parents passing, and all of a sudden that's hit home, and our generation is starting to pass. So we figured that we should get together and just celebrate all of us folks who are still kicking around.
Kinter said she was so happy everyone made an effort to get together.
I'm so happy. I'll probably cry every 10 minutes because of all these faces that we're seeing. And we're still above ground and not older than dirt.
The 70s was a transformational period for Park City. While the city struggled financially at the time, it was also a time when locals could ski powder runs until noon, buy a Main Street building for back taxes, and hop between watering holes. At the time, McMullen said locals were either former miners or skiers.
We were kind of the first generation of people that came to Park City. We were all ski bums. That's how we all started out. And we like to say that we kind of built the city. I mean, we really did.
John Vrabel moved to Park City in 1964 and still lives in Old Town. He said houses were really cheap and the skiing was good.
Back then, it snowed a lot. I mean, the first winter, 68, 69, that I lived in the house, I measured the snow from the top of my step 10 feet up. You know, it was a glory year for skiing, and it just stayed fun.
Since he moved to the area, Vrabel said it's gotten a bit crowded for his taste, but he still enjoys some peace in the morning. Vrabel also said it's been nice to reconnect with old friends and share stories from leaving or staying. Stanley Cordova is one former Parkite who now lives in San Diego, California. He lived in Park City in 1978 and said at the time it was pretty laid back.
This was a town with no stoplights, no fast food. When you had too much to drink at night, the police were out front and they'd give you a ride home.
McMullen and Kinter said they hope the group will stay in touch now that they've all reconnected. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And joining me now in the studio is the longtime executive director of the Early Childhood Alliance, Kristen Schultz, with an update on everything going on at the Alliance. Good morning to you, Kristen.
Good morning, Lynn. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this road naming, because that's curious and I don't really know much about it.
Yeah, we're very excited. So Columbus Pacific Development, PC TOTS, and Park City Community Foundation's Early Childhood Alliance are auctioning the opportunity to name a new road, which is located in Silver Creek Estates, which is near the junction of Highway 40 and Interstate 80. So all the proceeds from this auction will be evenly split between PC TOTS and the Early Childhood Alliance to support access to high quality early care and education in our community. The auction is open until October 25th, 2024, and you can learn more at parkcitycf.org. /pave the way.
Why would it be important to be able to name a road with regard to early childhood development?
Well, I'm not sure that there's a nexus there, but I think it is a fantastic opportunity to leave a legacy in this town, right? Mm-hmm. And let me also clarify, like, there are some rules about naming a road. If there's mm-hmm. something close to it, you know, that you can't repeat a name and you can't obviously name it anything offensive. But in general, you know, you get to make your mark, right? And you get to make your mark in such a way where the funds that you use to, you know, buy the right to name the road are going to be used to help support future Park City kids. In there.
So is it sort of like the highest bidder, the highest donor?
It is. So there's an auction site, and it's just like any other auction. You know, people will place bids. The opening bid is $5,000, and the highest highest bidder wins.
How about that? Yeah. Okay, until October 25th.
25th.
Okay, please just don't name it Silver something.
There are rules about if there's too many, you know, yeah. things that sound like it. Yes.
Exactly. Okay. Well, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the Park City Community Foundation's Early Childhood Alliance, you've been going on, what, about 10
5 years?
Oh, 5 years.
Yeah.
Seems like longer, but maybe that's because you've made such an impact in the community.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so as the Early Childhood Alliance, we focus on trying to improve outcomes prenatal through three in our community. And it was started several years ago when the Park City Community Foundation was trying to focus on where are the areas where we can make a substantial difference in the lives of our community members. And as the brain science has advanced and we really have learned how important it is to start people off with a strong foundation, a lot of people realized that we, as a community, wanted to focus on providing our youngest Park City neighbors with the greatest start in life. And so we do it through many things. We support a lot of parents as teachers, home visiting programs. You know, parents are doing the very best they can and want the very best for their kids, but oftentimes it's nice to have someone come in and give you some ideas about, you know, where your child is developmentally, you know, wherever that might be, and what the parent can be doing to really stimulate the brain activities and support both the parents and the kids. And then I would say over the last 2 or 3 years, we've really been focusing on improving access to high quality early care and learning. We really want parents to have fantastic choices for where their kids are when they're working or in school. And frankly, the model that we have in the U.S., where we leave it up to parents to kind of see what you can find and see what you can afford, is frankly not serving our entire community very well. And so we've been very active in trying to improve the choices that we have here locally.
Do you have numbers on the demographic in our community in terms of how many moms have full-time jobs, for example, or how many parents in general, you know, are to have two working parents?
Yeah, thank you. So I think in our community, it's roughly 79% of our households that have children under five have all available adults in the household working. So that could be a single parent who is working, or if you have two parents in the home, both of them would be working. So 79% have all of the available adults in the house are working.
Wow. So only 21% of people in our community have one parent at home.
Staying at home, yeah.
Okay, that's big. And so the Parents as Teachers, the little organization, mm-hmm. can you talk a little bit more about it? I was familiar with it when you first started, and you had maybe one or two people that were serving the entire community. What is the certification process for someone who might be interested in doing that? And how many trainers do you have at the moment?
Thank you. Yeah, so this is actually a program that is run by Holy Cross Ministries, who is one of our fantastic partners. Parents as Teachers is a nationally certified curriculum for home visiting. And so this program is run by people, so it's not a volunteer opportunity to be the home visitor. You go through extensive training in the, you know, the official Parents as Teachers curriculum, and then you provide the home visiting and the coaching. And it is a more robust home visiting program than the other one that we have in Summit County, which is Welcome Baby. The parents are expected, there's more visits per month, and there's a little bit more expected from the parents in terms of participation. I really love in Summit County that we have two home visiting mm-hmm. programs. We also have Welcome Baby, which is offered through the United Way of Northern Utah and is based out of the Summit Pediatrics office.
Okay.
And that is the one where they do train volunteers who are interested to go in the homes and do the home visiting. So if anyone is interested in being trained to be a volunteer to do some home visits, I would love to connect with you and connect them to Welcome Baby. But it is nice. We have both, I would say, a higher touch home visiting program through Parents as Teachers and a little bit lighter touch a volunteer model with Welcome Baby, and both are fantastic.
Okay, good to know. Well, last year the city and county contributed funds to create a local child care scholarship program. And this was in partnership partly with the Early Childhood Alliance, but also with Upwards. What is Upwards?
So Upwards is actually just the company that the city selected through their RFP process to administer the city's program. And so it is, a Park City Municipal Scholarship Program, and there is a Summit County Scholarship Program. And Upwards is actually just the administrator that has hired to run the system.
So how many young children have benefited from the scholarship program, and what are the, I'm assuming this is getting them into preschool programs or childcare programs. What are those programs?
Yeah, thank you. So it's actually for kids from age from birth until they are eligible for kindergarten, which you need to turn 5 by September 2nd each year to be eligible. So there are some 5-year-olds, for example, that are in the scholarship program because, the way their birthday fell, they weren't yet in kindergarten. But there are 4 components to the scholarship program. The first is a resident childcare tuition scholarship, again, up to kindergarten eligibility age. There's also a workforce tuition scholarship program. So if you live or work in Summit County, we have scholarships for both of those categories. There's also the Park City has a separate scholarship for its own employees. I think there are 11 Park City municipal employees who are receiving scholarships through that. And then the final component is an incentive for providers to serve the families who are receiving a subsidy from the Department of Workforce Services. And I know this sounds kind of wonky, but the federal dollars that are available to support childcare are administered in Utah through the Department of Workforce Services. And we as a community really want our families to get their fair share. We want to connect these families with those subsidies, and we want to incentivize providers to also serve the families who have those subsidies. So the fourth component is really geared towards increasing our community's access to the federal dollars to which we're entitled. And I'm proud to say the program has really done a good job at that. We're really seeing a large increase in DWS use in our community. I think we have 21 families that are receiving scholarships that also are getting the DWS scholarship. And it's a huge benefit for these families because this scholarship goes up until the kids are 13. So once they're in elementary school, you still have after school costs and summer costs. And also, if something changes for that family and they move out of our community, this one will follow them throughout the state of Utah. So anyways, we are actively trying to connect families with that.
Yeah,
support.
That's great. What is childcare costing these days? Can you take us through maybe just daycare and then any preschool kinds of costs?
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, I want to applaud the Park City School District. We are a real leader in expanding preschool for 3- and 4-year-olds in our community. And that is a fantastic, high quality, affordable option for a lot of families in our community. So at the school district preschool, I think it's around, and don't quote me exactly, but I think it's around $800 a month for the 4-year-old program if you are not in the aftercare program. If you add the aftercare component, I think it's about $1,200 a month. If you're in the kind of private, 0-5 childcare provider system, it varies quite a bit. And it typically is much more expensive for the younger children. So you're, 0-3 because you need more staff to deal with the younger children. So it ranges anywhere from, say, $2,000 a month. Actually, some of them are higher than that. It really ranges, I would say, between maybe $1,200 and $2,500 a month, depending on where you are. But it's very expensive.
Very expensive. Yeah. Even the inexpensive option that is subsidized by the school district sounds expensive to me. And that's a 3- and 4-year-old program.
Yeah, so the 4-year-old program is 5 days a week, full day, and they can go to aftercare. Currently, the 3-year-old program is 2 days a week and 3 hours a day. So for our workforce families, it can be a little bit difficult sometimes to make the 3-year-old program work just because of the smaller hours during the week.
Great. Well, thanks for all those updates. Anything else that you wanted to take a look at this morning?
No, I honestly, I really wanted to thank our city and our county elected officials for investing in this system. I think they've been real leaders in this area. And I would really encourage everyone who's listening to thank them, to say thank you very much. You know, we appreciate their support. We appreciate their investment. And it's important to keep it in the budget.
Yes, so, yes.
Yeah.
And I know that local nonprofits are kind of starting to move into that big event we have next
Live PC,
month.
Give PC.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. So that's November 15th. So please, everyone get out there. I know hopefully it won't be a freezing cold day because we're out on the street getting people excited about giving. But we're so thankful that our community is so supportive of all of our nonprofits. And so thank everyone in advance for their Live PC, Give PC donations.
Absolutely. Well, Kristen Schultz, the director of the Early Childhood Alliance within the Park City Community Foundation. It's great to talk to you again. Thanks for
Lynn.
Coming in.